Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It is the fifth day of October 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that is where, if you go thither and click upon the tab called Chat Room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in. You will be happily met by Don from Central PA, Hoghead, Jugapunch, Laborman, Steve from Georgistan. Yes, and longtime, indefatigable, inveterate chat room moderator, veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, utilizing his third stage guild navigator abilities, having inhaled much of the spice gases, has folded space to become Man Cave, because it's apparently still lovely out there in Northern California on this fine October day. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, we are at midweek. We are at midweek. We're downhill to Friday. Hump day, as it were. Yeah. Quick program note. Please recall, tomorrow's program will be 2 hours long, not three, because at 9 p.m., I will be filling in for Malloy. He and Kathy have to be absent from the studio. So, just make a note of it. Then, further note, I won't be on air on Monday. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, letting me know loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. I do appreciate that, because remember, we don't have confirmation speakers here. No program on Monday, because I'll be deep-throating another garden hose. I'm not looking forward to it, neither do I much care for the sort of CIA-style anesthesia that completely wipes out an entire hunk of memory. Don't like that at all. But it has to be done. No getting around it. And, there you go. Because if I were to get behind the microphone on Monday evening, God only knows what I might say. You know, sort of getting over the anesthesia thing. You might talk about, look, the sky's turned to paisley. And the walls are breathing. Lovely. Yeah, meanwhile, I will immediately begin getting emails saying, no, Bob, really, we want to hear that. You might want to hear it, but I don't want to do it. Because I have a long-standing pledge never to subject you to Limbaugh Radio. God knows, day after day, month after month, year after year, America's truth detector, subjected his followers, you know, the people, the people who had, I don't know, monkey brains for lunch for a decade, and it kind of turned their own to a sort of gray, slimy, viscous liquid between their ears, floating all around their amygdalae. Limbaugh, because, and you know, he can do it because he's a right winger, and that means there's no critical thinking involved. But I promised I would never do that, and I won't, and I haven't, and I don't. So, no program Monday. Okay, what beeped? That's damned annoying. Hopefully nothing will go pear-shaped during the program. But anyway, that's kind of the program note. Now, let me elaborate. We'll just add one little caveat on top of this, and hopefully it won't mean anything. I plan to be on the air from 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow evening as well. However, because as Forrest Gump once remarked, at least I ain't led no humdrum life. Ferg, and this isn't my humdrum life, this is his humdrum life. Ferg has a doctor's appointment tomorrow at 2 o'clock in Charleston. This would be an orthopedic surgeon of some sort. Because, and, you know, let this be a lesson to you. Ferg was out playing disc golf, which requires a little bit more care in elocution than simply saying frisbee golf. You have to say disc golf because you don't want to give an unfair leg up to the Whammo Corporation, makers of the redoubtable frisbee, which until the invention of the hacky sack was the favorite toy of stoners everywhere. But no, he was playing. Okay, it was frisbee golf. He was playing frisbee golf. There's a frisbee golf course not too far from here, and he had putted out, as it were. Does one putt out in frisbee golf? I guess. I don't know. But he reached into the little basket where you have to throw your frisbee. That, of course, is also an unpaid product placement, I would also note. And somebody, in crafting the basket, had left a jagged-ass spike of metal sticking up. And this is the part where everybody's going to go, ow, cringe. And he ran, he just kind of reached in to grab his frisbee, not thinking, and rammed that hunk of metal way the hell up into his hand. Sideways. I don't mean the metal was. I mean, it ran it into his sideways into his hand, as opposed to, you know, linearly along the same plane as the fingers and so forth. No, he ran it the other way. And began experiencing, ton of pain, and B, numbness, where his hand just doesn't do hand stuff right now. It's kind of a not fully functioning hand. So yesterday he went over to the Quack-in-a-Shack Dock-in-a-Box, and they took some x-rays and said, you've got ulnar nerve damage. Time for you to see a hand surgeon. And so the hand surgeon is apparently in Charleston. And that means I got to take him to Charleston tomorrow. Ick, right? So there we have. The appointment is at 2. It takes about an hour and a half to get down there and park and all that. And then it takes, however long it takes him to get you in. And then however long it takes for the actual consult. So probably out by 3:30, 3:45, on the road by 4. with any luck at all back here by 5:30, but I'm still going to put the caveat out that there may be no program at all for me tomorrow evening, and we'll pick up at 9 p.m. with the Malloy program. I don't want it to be that way, but it may work out that way. So just make a note of it, please. It is, like I said, the fifth day of October, 2016. That's a Wednesday. This is a Wednesday. And Wednesdays, of course, around here are ever so much more than the aforementioned hump day or downhill to Friday, middle of the week, whatever. No. Just like any other, this lovely, sunny Appalachian day with the last waning warmth of a dying sun. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. Glory! Absolutely. Yes, Sister Carol Baker asking, are we in need of intercessory prayer for one of the young'uns? Absolutely. Absolutely. All prayers to all deities, Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, what have you. I guess it's more than welcome. Deities take Sister Carol quite seriously because she's standing there with her solar-charged cattle prod in hand. But it is it's prayer meeting Wednesday, which meant that we had a lovely, lovely meal down in the fellowship hall not long ago at all, brethren and sistren. Oh, my goodness gracious, the little old blue-haired ladies went absolutely plumb wild making meatloaf all day long in real bread loaf pans, too, by God. Oh, they did a special something good job. You know, they used the sausage and ground beef and just a smattering of just enough of panko breadcrumbs to hold things together. It's not all mushy. And it was gently seasoned, and they cheat, and they, instead of using ketchup on the top, no, they use hoisin sauce. And, oh, it is so, so magnificently good with fresh-baked bread. Oh, yes, indeedy, absadamtively. Green beans that are actually green. Mm-hmm. And not out of a can marked Allen's, and thus do not have any shellfish flavoring. Nope. And the obligatory mashed potatoes. They put the mashed potatoes in there just for me because they know how much I love them. It was wonderful. And because these things take time to make, finished it all off, brethren and sistren, with a Mississippi mud cake. Oh, them little melted marshmallows running all through it. Hoo-wee! Yes, indeedy. I tell you what, there ain't hardly never any leftovers on prayer meeting Wednesday. And Lord knows the Mississippi mud cake, the Mississippi done ran dry. Because there wasn't a scrap left, the little ones was left wondering what dessert tastes like yet again, and we just keep telling them you got to grow up and be a deacon. Because the deacons, having wiped out the Mississippi mud cake, trundled their massive bulk up the stairs and out into the parking lot where they stood there smoking. They stand up there and they light one cigarette off of another like they're waiting for a firing squad or something. You'd think that the prayer meeting Wednesday service was 3 hours long or something. They wasn't going to have another one. But, you know, one blast on the whistle and a little wave of the cattle prod from Sister Carol Baker. And I tell you what, those deacons, they jumped up and got moving. Blew right through the door, right through the vestibule, right past that recently newly desiccating bowl of buttermints. Came on down front where they're waiting, brethren and sistren, they're waiting. They're waiting for the offertory hymn. They are. Ha! Glory, hallelujah, they are. Those are brass plates lined in velvet with a little button that says PayPal in the bottom. And brethren and sister, and I'm telling you, we got $265 to raise, and we might as well get started on it now. We're going to have to bump that by two because I'm going to be gone out of here on Monday. So rather than running the risk of having some almighty forlorn humongous hole in the ground, we'll start now and we'll just call it... let's call it 365 tonight, brethren and sister, and that way we don't have to take it all at one bite, and then maybe Friday we'll add a hundred onto it if we've come up even. But $365 is what we're looking for in the way of a love offering, brethren and sister, as the plates go passing around and everybody with every head bowed and every eye closed, glory, except the one you keep kind of peepee squinted open so that your neighbor don't cronk you in the head with the big old heavy brass bound velvet lined offering plate. Just punch that little PayPal button. Thank you very kindly, by the way, to our monthly subscribers who finished off the last of Brother Deacon Ace's challenge from last night. Thank you very, very kindly, because that allows us to say only 265 plus 100 is 365 this evening. Nobody bolting the doors, not after what y'all did to the carpet the last time I did that. No. But it is kind of irresistible going through all that sweet tea, isn't it? Especially with the lemon. A lot of extra lemon wedges added to the sweet tea this week in honor of the passing of Arnold Palmer. Yes. So, brethren and sistren, I'm going to call the minister of music forward to lead us in the offertory hymn, and hopefully we won't find ourselves in a $565 hole tomorrow evening, and we'll get done what needs doing and get going where it needs gone. So again, with every head bowed and every eye closed, amen, hallelujah, glory, we'll get to studying God's word in short order. Brother Minister of Music, if you would please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world, the fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? Hot! I love you. Welcome, brethren and sistren. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This fifth day of October. I'm calling on you now to get up off of your seats and onto your feet and get on out from betwixt the pews and come on down that blood red aisle and fall, brethren and sistren, upon your knees and at the altar and lay, ha, glory. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense. Ha! Amen. Flowing through you. Ha! From the server. Ha! On high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Max Maximum Metropolitan Bob Kincaid. And this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Oh, glory, brethren and sister. And I tell you what, this evening we got lots to study and ponder upon. Oh, we have much, much indeed. Brethren and sister, the devil. Wait a minute. The devil, just checking to, okay, everything's back the way it was. Okay, good. Is at work in this here heathen land that was once founded by people who had a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And you know who the devil is after? More than anybody else. You know who he wants? Well, don't trust me. Don't trust me to make some sort of declaration of deviltry. Brethren and sisters, we have Sludge Bucket Jim Baker right here, coming to you from far Branson, Missouri, to tell you who the devil has got it in for. Mm-hmm. Take it away, Jim.
I tell you, I'm still hoping to get the tape of me and Ronald Reagan, and it's an amazing tape of 45 minutes with him. That no one has seen yet, where he really, I'd like to call that tape the day Ronald Reagan became a prophet.
Right.
Yeah, we can call it many things. There is a photograph. Jim can't find the tape, but there is a photograph of a young Jim Baker still with much dark hair on his head back before he went to prison and everything for trying to build a water slide for Jesus. And there was a woman in there somewhere too who was not Tammy Faye Baker. But he's a leaning across there, a looking at Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan is looking at him as if to say, "Hey, mommy, who the fuck is this?" That's what I call it. That's the moment when Ronald Reagan said, "Who the fuck are you?" And I don't know that, but anyway. Anyway, never. Let's get back to Jim. This Jim's story.
I actually was able to view it with you. They let us watch it, the people that have it. And Mom was there. Little Lori was there. I was there.
What's one thing he said that is in your brain right
Well,
now?
First of all, it was in 1979 when you interviewed him. He was the governor at the time of California, and he said, if America doesn't turn back to God, Sodom and Gomorrah will happen.
America will become Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. That was in 1979.
Mm. They were saying the same things about him as they're saying about Trump today.
Oh, and totally, yeah.
The reason I mentioned Trump.
Well, before we get to the reason why he mentioned Trump, we might want to mention the fact that Ronald Reagan stopped being governor of California in 1975. In 1979, he was the hopeful presidential candidate, Ronald Reagan, and would sit down and talk to anybody who would give him 15 seconds of time. I'm sure there's lots of pictures of Ronald Reagan with lots of different people from 1979 because he was trying to build a base of support for his vast presidential ambitions to America, you know, right in the, right, you get it, yeah. So that was what was going on in 1979. And apparently, Jim Baker, nor the not Tammy Faye, sitting next to him, have any memory of it that's any better than Ronald Reagan's was at that particular moment in time. Never mind me. You kids go ahead.
Is because he is pro-life.
Yes,
he is believes in protecting our borders.
That's what your pro-life feller does, is he believes in protecting borders, especially protecting the uterine border, okay, the border there at the cervix crossing, that because he's pro-life. Of course, there may, after last night's vice presidential white guy debate, we may have a little bit of a problem, because when Tim Kaine mentioned the fact that Donald Trump had repeatedly said, and cited instances in which he had, that he would like to see women punished for having an abortion, Mike Pence just said, nuh-uh. And all the little Trumpansies kind of looked around at each other and said, I thought we was going to get to punish some women's. No, we ain't. He never said that. He didn't. Nuh-uh, while shaking their head up and down. There were some very confused Trumpansies last night, because Mike Pence kept saying that the guy that they got so gaga over was not the guy they got gaga over because of the things that Mike Pence said that he didn't say, which is what got them gaga over him in the first place. You can see how it becomes a problem. Yeah. But he's protecting, Donald Trump wants to protect our cervical borders. And of course, his daughter, Ivanka, who Donald Trump would really like to, if it wasn't for the fact that she's his daughter, and he's, I guess, kind of still thinking that one over. Ivanka has a new ad out for Donald Trump, in which she tells the women's of America that the most important job they can ever do is to get pregnant. I wish I was making this up, but I'm not. It's true. It's true. And it's sort of creepy and Handmaid's Tale-y. Now, here's Ivanka, who has some nasty little gits of her own, because, you know, they're genetically related to Donald Trump, so that makes them, you know, sins of the father and all of that. But really, no, she put this, it's disturbing. And those are the words she used. the most important job any woman can have is being a mother. So that woman who becomes a brain surgeon and saves a little child's life by removing a tumor from its skull, not nearly as important as if she would have just got all pregnant and stuff and had a kid. I wonder if the most important job a Muslim mother can have, a Muslim woman can have, is being a mother. I wonder, Ivanka, if the most important job a Mexican woman can have is being a mother. I mean, as long as they don't turn out to be a rapist who wants to come to America and is happy to continue raping in Mexico, why not? Sure. Yeah, okay. You're right. So, the most, how about single moms? Most important job they can have is being a mother. And hell with any job that they might have to take care of their little ones. Once they've had that baby, well, they're it's over. They've done their most important job. I mean, I wish it wasn't so, but...
The important job any woman can have is being a mother, and it shouldn't mean taking a pay cut. I'm Ivanka Trump, a mother, a wife, and an entrepreneur. Donald Trump understands the needs of a modern workforce. My father will change outdated labor laws so that they support women and American families.
Well, this sucks.
He will provide tax credits for child care, paid maternity leave, and a pension.
Oh, well, we got enough of that. He's going to give tax credits for child care. Tax credits. Of course, you'd kind of have to file taxes to get those tax credits now, wouldn't you? But this is in line with Trump's thinking, because after all, he said women getting pregnant is a real pain in the ass for business. But not just some women, according to Ivanka. Any woman, the most important job any woman can have is being a mother. And you know, that doesn't include your mother Teresa there, because she wasn't a real mother. She just kind of got off on everybody, on other people's suffering. Not the real kind. No. But nonetheless, I've strayed a bit from our initial brief. Back to Jim Baker, because it's prayer meeting Wednesday, right?
What about the Supreme Court? Let's talk about that. I mean, what about that? Yeah. I mean, that is huge. And when I heard him say, because I am a news watcher, like to a fault, probably, you know, but when I heard him say the other day, and you referenced it, that he said the first thing he would do when he gets into office, one of the first things, like top couple things, he said, overturn Roe versus Wade. And I was like, wow.
Now see, he's going to be more hated for that than anything else.
Well,
they will kill for that. They will kill him for that.
Well, this is what I have. Well, I should.
I mean, that devil, that demons of hell will come out to protect the killing of babies.
Well, here's what I have a problem with.
The devil loves to kill.
I have a problem with preachers.
Tried to kill Jesus, tried to kill Moses at birth.
Tried to kill Jesus, tried to kill Moses at birth. The devil just loves him some baby. What are you eating there, baby? Baby what? Baby. Yeah, whole. So the devil's got it in for Donald Trump. Which is kind of curious because there's whole lots and lots of people around this country, many of whom have had their lives sort of... lots of people who've only had their lives just barely tangentially touch the existence of Donald Trump, and they come away pretty well convinced that he is the devil. But, yeah. The devil will try to kill Donald Trump. Maybe the same way she killed Vince Foster! Oh, different devil. Why, thank you, Jen, in Australia, in regard to Ivanka and her the most important job any woman can have is to be a mother. Jen chose her words wisely, offering up the following. Yeah, fuck you, Ivanka. Sometimes you guys' responses are downright zen-like. But Jen elaborated on that, saying, "Entrepreneur, fuck you, Ivanka. When have you ever grown a business? Like your fool for a daddy. You've had everything handed to you. You condescending a-hole entrepreneur. Noun, a person who sets up a business or businesses taking on financial risks in the hope of profit." Yeah, the risk isn't even the name of a game to Ivanka Trump. No. And frankly, if you look around a bit, you'll find out that that Benito Cheeto has never known much about risk either. Because, as it turns out, Pappy Trump, you know, the Klansman, Fred Trump, whose daddy came over here as Fred Drumpf, or maybe his daddy's daddy, back before 1980, which would be 36 years ago by my reckoning, back when Donald was younger than 34 years old, Pappy Trump tucked away some $38 million. Because O'Donnie Boy was proving himself to be a bit of a... what's the word I'm looking for here? Yeah, fuck up. Yep. Long before he ever lost $0.91 billion trying to run casinos. Yeah, I just still get a chuckle out of that, losing money running casinos. Back before that, Daddy had to set up a $35 million line of credit at Chase Manhattan Bank. And it turns out that prior to 1980, Trump was tanking all over the place. Rental properties on 3rd Avenue, 5th Avenue, New York, East 56th Street, East 57th Street, East 61st Street, and East 67th Street. Well, all of them sort of corkscrewed into the ground. Because rental income wouldn't cover the cost of operation. And that's when Fred had to step in. He posted something like $406,379 in losses in 1978. Of course, that's chump change compared to $0.91 billion. But that's what happens when you enable a fuck-up. When the fuck-up goes out and loses, you know, $0.406 million, you double down and back him up, and bail him out, and he goes and fucks up some more. $1975, you know what his income was? And not because he's released anything, this is all just investigative journalism. Courtesy of Newsweek. He reported $76,210 in income in 1975. In 1976, he had $24,594 in income. 1978, it got a little bit better, or 1977, it got a little bit better at $118,530. Which might be a moment for mentioning this. Quit telling people how to vote, Bob! If you read the New York Times story about the minuscule amount of tax data that we have, you'll find that over, what was it, 7 seasons? And by the way, if you hear him talk about it or any of his surrogates, they'll say that The Apprentice was one of the most successful popular television shows of all time. Well, it turns out that he was getting $50,000 to $100,000 per episode for the aforementioned incredibly popular television program. That's a lot of money to you, and it's damn sure a lot of money to me. It's a huge amount of money to the Horn. But in terms of wildly popular television programs, chump change. Back in 1997, Entertainment Weekly reported, this is 1997, remember, Jerry Seinfeld was pulling down as the principal of the television show Seinfeld, $1 million an episode. And the other cast members weren't exactly eating beans. Compare the paltry $50,000 to $100,000 that Trump was getting, and a certain something emerges. And that's this. He must have needed the money. Otherwise, $50,000 to $100,000 for the wealthiest man on earth. Wait a minute. The smartest businessman in the world?
It would be an insult. It would prove how not smart at business he was, because he wasn't negotiating himself $500,000 an episode or $1 million an episode. And that Seinfeld number was out there, and that was an NBC program. And with an ego like his, you got to figure he was aware of those kinds of numbers. He needed the money. Yeah, I think so. Carol Baker asks, weren't the Friends cast members each getting $1 million an episode apiece? Yeah, something like that. And I remember when, oh, what was it, Cheers? Ted Danson and Kirstie Alley got some obscene amount of money. Right. And again, all NBC properties. And yet Donald Trump couldn't ring more than 100 large an episode for The Apprentice, which admittedly was a stupid reality television program, which I can proudly say I never watched. But it really does sort of lead inexorably to the conclusion that fraud merchant needed the money and was cashing the checks. So that may be the one, and I'm betting that was the one little needle that was the one little gom jabbar that Hillary got in the first pageant. You know the one where Lester Holt was so mean and yet invisible at the same time. But by God, he was a bulldog compared to what's her name last night, wasn't he? But that one probably stung worse than anything. Ah, he's not as rich as he says he is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but damn, I keep getting pulled away from our topic, and of course that would have to be Jim Baker and operating from Donald Trump's cue, where he made fun of Hillary Clinton falling down. Oh, wait. Correction, Bob, courtesy of Brother Deacon Gerald, who is chair of the Building and Grounds Committee of the Cathedral of Common Sense. Correction, Bob, when you look at them objectively, all reality shows are stupid. I can posit no argument against that. I stand corrected. But Jim Baker knows why Donald Trump was mocking Hillary Clinton fainting there on September 11th. Yeah, take it away, Jim. Oh, and by the way, don't forget to order your buckets of food-like sludge.
Something's going on. People are ordering again. All the big generators are gone.
Mm-hmm.
All the green, the middle portable yes. Generators, they're at the end. We can't offer any more. Mm-hmm. We have a few in stock that are just the protection that we have to stop. That's
right.
Stop.
Yes.
So
yes.
Somebody here, I might still be able to get one while I'm taping, but they're we projected ahead, and we are really out of them, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's something's going on. There's, you know, when you move with the prophets, you know, mm-hmm. when things are happening.
Yeah.
The events show what's going on. And I'm telling you what's going on with this election. Hillary Clinton collapsed Do you know what day she collapsed on?
9/11.
9/11. You knew that.
She knew that.
Well,
with her tiny little brain.
She collapsed. Let's put it that way. The one that we all saw.
Yeah, the last collapse.
Yeah. Yes.
And I wrote something down. There was more, but it's the 15th anniversary of 9/11.
Right.
She collapses.
Mm-hmm.
There's another piece of that. I've written it down. I hadn't shared this yet. And I sent them. I don't know if I've sent it to you or not. I think
I received that one, but
I sent it to a couple prophets.
Uh huh.
I said, "What could this mean?"
Oh yes, I did. Uh huh. And I know who.
And
I
sent it to. Nobody answered me.
I didn't know.
9/11 was probably the most stern warning God ever gave to America. And a lot of people don't want me to say that.
Right.
But 9/11 was the harbinger. If you haven't read the book, The Harbinger, you need to read it. Hillary did collapse
read
on
it.
That day. I saw it with my
His audience mind. Doesn't so, even know what it means.
And it's the 15th anniversary of 9/11. And she was at 9/11.
Yeah, the memorial.
She was at and on the spot of 9/11.
A harbinger. Is what Emery goes on when Eileen lets him leave the safety of the Barca Lounger. And go down to the Moose Club on a Friday night. He comes back, he's been on a harbinger. Right.
9/11. That's the last. Okay, are you listening to me? Tell me, is God trying to tell us something? Some of you prophet people, I know there's prophet peoples in the room here. You understand, you hear from God. There's a collapse coming. Much bigger than that collapse. That is the prophetic signal that would be on 9/11, at 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You give me the odds for that happening.
Right.
Where the towers came down 15 years ago to that date. It's time to be ready. I guess we were talking about the 90-day buckets, weren't we?
We were.
Yes,
they were. And you have to be ready the next time that Hillary Clinton falls down. Because you'll want your buckets of sludge food from Jim Baker Ministries. Bucket o' puddin'. You know, just, and we wonder why I have stomach troubles. I haven't, just thinking about it makes my liver quiver. Yeah. Meanwhile, anniversary of 9/11? Brother Usher Steve writes, Hillary collapsed on the 41st anniversary of Pete Rosebait breaking Ty Cobb's career hits record? Read the book. It was a harbinger. Mm-hmm. Steve's having a little trouble. Subject line, I've just fucking had it. How is it that anyone can listen to someone say that Trump or Reagan or any one of these people is pro-life when Reagan presided over such a large growth in weapons and war, and these peoples are such perpetrators of violence? At which point do Americans just stand up and say, no, no, no? Well, we don't, because we're atne ute ait bre, if you one what I mean. Steve says, I've come to a conclusion. Either we on the left are just living in a completely untrue alternate universe and reality, or the right is. There's no room to reconcile these two notions anymore. How can people who don't even agree on reality live in the same country? Signed Steve, ready to check out and become a hermit. No, that's I understand how you can see it that way, Steve, but that's not quite how it is. There is a reality out there, and the reality is that Ronald Reagan was a bloodthirsty monstrosity. Just ask, ask any of the families. They're grown now. Some of the mamas and daddies have died in their own right, the grandpas and the grandmas. But, go down to El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, and ask around. Ask around about what it meant when Ronald Reagan violated the law to support the Contras in Nicaragua in direct contravention of duly passed and signed into law acts of Congress. And, of course, you can also ask around about what the Christianity of George W. Bush meant to people who hauled maimed and butchered children out of the cruise missile rubble of shock and awe. Or then again, don't ask. Because the answer is heartbreaking. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, dang it, Bob, Hillary didn't fall on September 11th. Those were federal agents arresting her, and that was a perp walk. Because she's a murderer! Note courtesy of Jen in Australia. While scouring for more headlines for my 1-2-3 punch challenge, up to 9, it was reinforced for me yet again that the Merkins among us need a serious education. Jen, here we behind the cornpone curtain, we could pronounce that edumacation. Our nation needs a televised town hall explaining a few S words: sexism, socialism, sensitivity to others, secularism. The latter, the separation of church and state, God damn it, is needed desperately. I read headline. A reflection on evangelical Christians who suddenly feel they have nowhere to turn this election. I can tell them where to turn. Matthew 6:5. And when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners that they may be seen by others. Get your frickin' religion out of our politics. No one wants to stop you having your thang. We just want you to stop fanatically enforcing it, conflating it with the business of government. God damn it, Ivanka. Here's another clue. For a very large percentage of women, pregnancy is not a religion. At the very least, I want religion out of my government, its tentacles out of the body politic. Where's the fucking pushback? Where was the pushback when attendance at the unconstitutional, Bob, National Prayer Breakfast, since 1950, really, became mandatory? Oh my God! Jen notes, meanwhile, Steve is a genius. Mm-hmm. And I realize this kind of stuff, it's tough. I was on the way back from picking up Margie at Hellmart last night when we got to the end of the VP debate, and Elaine Quijano, was that her name? The alleged moderator of same, got around to asking the precious little religious question. Because we got to ask the vice presidential candidates about how religious they are. Because, you know, right there in the Constitution, it says there shall be a religious test for office. Oh, actually, no, it doesn't. It says there shall be no religious test for office. And Tim Kaine answered by saying that he had great moral qualms against murdering people in the name of the state, who, having been tried and convicted and found guilty by a jury, were sentenced to death and in situations, especially in places like the Old Dominion of Virginia, where people of color were far more likely to be sentenced to death than good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered white folk. And he had great moral qualms about it, but nonetheless, the law is the law, and he couldn't interpose his religious beliefs upon the laws duly passed by the state of Commonwealth of Virginia. And it made pretty good copy. It showed that he understood, and he said that he understood that religion is a personal thing, and he made quite clear that no one should ever try to impose their personal religious views upon the entire country, because everyone didn't necessarily share those views. And then up steps Race Bannon. Mike Pence. Race, what are you doing to Haji? Get away from him, Johnny. But I think Carol Baker's right. She says Mike Pence won't be happy until I'm deep throating his religion in the town square. On the upside, Republican Jesus appreciates the free market, and I can look forward to him leaving a double sawbuck on the nightstand. Just leave it on the nightstand and walk away, Jesus. But you could set a watch by it. I mean, you knew that the minute the religion question was on the table, that Mike Pence was going to talk about the precious little fetuses and all the mean women what was going around aborting them fetuses. Why, thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Gerald. Brother Deacon Gerald just knows. Johnny Quest reference. Nice. Thank you. I think there's going to be a lot of them because, well, Mike Pence is Race Bannon. And, well, and his dog Bandit, and his running mate Bandit, I mean, Trump. Yeah. Carol getting fan mail from Jan in Australia. Oh, God, Carol, LOL, the horn where we can laugh whilst we cry. Yeah, I know. But, oh, he waxed so poetic about the fetuses. Never acknowledging for a moment the truth of what Tim Kaine had said, and that was that Mike Pence wants to force his bizarre, twisted, sick religious beliefs on the rest of the country. And I've given up on ever living to see the day when, you know, a vice presidential candidate or a presidential candidate will answer the precious twee little religious question by saying, "Hey, lady, you ever read the Constitution? You ever seen that part about there will be no religious test for holding office? Yeah, that. What's your religion, honey? Tell us about your faith." Yeah, it doesn't matter, does it? Personal, isn't it? Yeah, well, fuck off. Too much to hope for, I know. Robert writes from Australia, God caused 9/11? Well, I mean, Jim Baker says so. You know, it was just a warning. That was just a warning. When God wants to warn you, he murders 3,000 innocent people. And people still worship this idea of a deity. Holy shit. But Robert, God caused 9/11? Shouldn't America have invaded heaven instead of Iraq? Yeah, or maybe not invaded anywhere. I mean, no, that was never an option, was it, Robert? No, no, it wasn't. Well, I've gotten on the fighting side of Marty. Bob. See, he's trying to get around the gimmick infringement charge by doing it twice. That's Bob X2. Please do not debase Johnny Quest by linking Mike Pence to any character like Race Bannon. I'm having a hard enough time to not link Mike Pence with Hunter Pence. Oh, that's true. Taking the gimmick infringement in stride, Ron and Raleigh notes, hey, didn't we rename Pence Racist Bannon? I think we did. Thanks for the reminder. Oh, absolutely. Thanks for the reminder. We got ever so much stuff to continue to cover on this prayer meeting Wednesday. And at 7 minutes past the hour, and it gives me no pleasure in saying this, but we are still looking to raise dollar number one of 365 that we need to raise this evening. 265 at the barest minimum. And so, hopefully that will happen sometime in the near future. See, that just grabbed Carol, too. What Carol said, wait, God murdered 3,000 people as a warning? I just realized what a good boss I am. I just send a memo to get people's attention. Well, that's because you don't operate on a Bronze Age principle, Carol. If you're a Bronze Age monotheistic god, a great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, you smite the fuck out of people, and especially the innocent ones, so that the guilty ones will look up and go, well, you know, if he does that to innocent people, I better straighten up. Nah, I'm not gonna. But that's evangelical Christianity. All that sinners in the hands of an angry God horse shit. Well, that's true, Brother Deacon Gerald. It was a very damn stern warning. Especially for the people who had to, you know, jump 90 floors to their deaths out of the World Trade Center. You know, any God that would do that to anybody, ain't worthy of worship. And anybody who worships that God is worshiping a demon. Amen, right? So let's take a little break. If you want to engage in conversation, you are more than welcome to do so. That's why we maintain phone lines here. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178 is one line. The other is 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. That line works better for some than others. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Hard to say. I wish I understood what it was that made that work or not work, but... I know, Gerald. Brother Deacon Gerald says, what the fuck? This religion stuff is confusing. That's why it's better left ignored, because it'll rot your mind. Um, But if you want to engage in conversation, that's available to you, as is Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, the contact there. And everything's pretty much, I mean, you want to talk about the VP debate? I guess we can. Steve from Georgistan noted, this election thing is wearing me out. I may go back to watching Netflix. But you know what? You can run, but you cannot hide. You can't. Lovely little group gathered together in the chat room if you'd like to jump in. Like I mentioned earlier, Don from Central PA's there, Hoghead's there, Jug of Punch, Jules, Laborman, Scott in San Diego, Sentient Being is there, Soapbox Geezer, Steve from Georgistan, Stockton Larry, and VT Blom, all waiting for your company. And you'll be mighty welcome. All right, so we'll take a break and then see if anybody wants to conversate. Otherwise, I have some more heroic tales of faith in action. Oh, joy. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. We'll be right back. Personally, I think Jim Baker should probably, and most other right-wing hack-fest radio programs should all just adopt it. Well, Brian May and the surviving members of Queen would probably object, but should that should be adopted as sort of like just the universal intro music. Yeah. Okay, so we've got some very good news out there. We have two challenges on the table. That hopefully will encourage folks to, so that we can not crawl into a great big hole that we won't see the outside of for a week. First, we have, in order to knock off the odd part of the amount, there is a $65 challenge on the table. And that was very, very kindly offered up by Chief Deaconess Carol Baker, who suggested we call it the Leave It on the Nightstand Challenge, or the Nightstand Challenge, per the usual, yes, per previously, what she said earlier. You know, about Republican Jesus appreciates the free market, and I can look forward to him leaving a double sawbuck on the nightstand. So the nightstand challenge is on the table. And after that, Bob in Texas has knocked off the other part. So there are two matching challenges. If we get matching monies to equal same, we will have knocked out 330 of $365 that we needed to raise this evening. Thank you, Bob, and thank you, Carol, very, very kindly. Now, I have, I've got some true tales, not from the Old West, no. I have some true tales of Christian hysterics waiting in the wings. And you're going to love them, and we will get to them right straight away. But because I hate keeping people on hold, let's run over and check in with Jim real quick. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I, you know, just kind of fending off the meanness and the hatefulness and trying to get to 9 p.m.
Understood. Listen, good luck with your son's procedure with the...
Yeah, tomorrow's just a consult, but I have a feeling there's going to be some knife work involved somewhere down the road.
Well, one might think so. Who knows? And, you know, of course, you've got your own thing next week, so good luck to you.
Thank you very kindly.
All that. But I just wanted to ask you some things about Jim Baker. Maybe I was having some trouble tuning, getting things to come in clearly. And you were talking about Jim Baker, a.k.a. of Jimmy and Tammy Faye.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
First,
and the water slide for Jesus. Don't forget the water slide.
Well, that's Falwell's thing, wasn't it? After he took over that ministry.
Well, after he moved in and took over, but it was that was a Jim Baker production. Heritage USA.
You know, I actually saw Jim and Tammy Faye back in Columbia when I lived there, and they were in their trial. And a friend and I, it was a Sunday morning, I guess we both gone to McDonald's to try to recover from the night before. And we were sitting outside of McDonald's, and he said, "My God, there's Jim Baker and Tammy Faye." And Tammy Faye was there in a black fright wig, and they both looked like midgets. and they got in that place.
How quickie. Could you? Wait, wait, wait. Time out, Jim. Stop. How could you tell it was a fright wig? It was Tammy Faye.
Honey, it was a fright wig, okay? It was a fright wig.
It was Sunday, and she was. It was Sunday morning, and she was a fright.
Yeah, and, you know, they were both real nervous, and I said, my God, it is. And they jumped into this big black Cadillac and you know, scurried away. But let me ask you something. You were mentioning slime buckets and stuff like that. I mean, is Jim Baker in the food business now?
He's in the apocalypse food business, Jim.
Would you please explain that to me without taking too much of your time?
For a while there, he would go on his little internet program, and he would have this wall of 5-gallon buckets behind him, and he's selling like dehydrated food that was apparently rejected by the Pentagon. And all you have to have is a clean source of water in the nuclear apocalypse or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or the tribulations, perhaps. And you add water to it, and it turns into potato soup and chocolate pudding and some sort of corn, green beans, God only knows. And he's, yeah, that's his latest hustle.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it's only $5,000 for a 30-day supply or something. Or maybe a year's supply. I don't know.
I just wondered what line of work he was into because, I mean, he was just, to me, so disgusting and just absolutely.
Well, he's still running the same gospel hustle.
Yeah, I noticed. And I saw it first. I didn't know who it was. And I said, is this guy breathing helium? And, you know, he's just, I don't know.
Well, if you get curious, you can just type in Jim Baker food bucket review, and there are a couple of actual cuisine types out there who have reviewed it, and it doesn't end well, Jim.
Okay, well, it would appear to me as though his product, if it needs all that clean water after a nuclear apocalypse, I don't think it's going to be real good unless you want to eat dry, because I don't think there's going to be a lot of water around.
It's not real good dry, and you know what? I don't care how much clean water you've got. It's not real good then either. I mean, I don't know if this raises... I don't even know if it rises to the level of what that one character said in The Lion King. You know, it tastes like shit, but you can live on it. No, it's not a... No, no. You know, remember the warthog? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Brother Baker, I guess, is going to have to make some money somewhere, and so he's selling this type of survival food, right?
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, as Brother Deacon Gerald just pointed out, Jim, clean source of water after the apocalypse. Hell, in West Virginia, we don't have that now.
Well, that's true, too. As a matter of fact, and when they had this group of scientists that were talking about the ramifications of these bad times, the first thing they brought up was the source of water and how there would be no source of real water that would be, you know, potable. And that just came to mind. And I don't know. This guy, some of these people just never go away, do they? I mean, Tammy Faye, I always thought was kind of funny and used to laugh at her, and I've told you before.
Well, she and Jan Crouch were funny in the same way.
Yeah.
The fright wigs, the thick makeup. But at least somewhere along the way, Tammy Faye had a sort of a redemptive moment.
Yeah, she did. You know, I remember she was on Roseanne on one of her shows, in which Roseanne and her sister had won the lottery, and they'd gone to the spa, and they were undergoing all these treatments for beautification. And the very end was the makeup artist. And, of course, you could see the very back of the person who was doing the makeup work. And she said, well, you know, I think you girls would really prefer the natural look. And after she said that, she turned around in a swivel chair, and there was Tammy Faye, and it was just a hoot. And you can imagine what Roseanne and her sister looked like when they came out of that place. I mean, my God. Oh, Lord, it was just too much to be believed. They had Todd Odom and people like that on there. I used to love Roseanne. I mean, she was so outrageous sometimes. But, you know, very much far ahead of her time. But, so you cleared that up as far as Mr. Baker's new
line. Do look up the reviews, though, Jim. They'll prove quite delightful, I think. I think you'll get quite the giggle.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Carol Baker just pointed out to me, she said, and to think, Tammy Faye drew her final breath in the exclusive gated Lock Lloyd community, just 20 minutes from my office. I go by there all the time. I don't know. Yeah, really, really.
Well.
One wonders if there's little stacks of, the Maybelline and CoverGirl and stuff there to just, you know, people remembering.
Well, I remember one time she said that she had raised a dead chicken from the dead or something like that. I don't know. I mean, like I said, that's been a long time ago, and I used to watch that show just for a hoot and just call into those people.
Well, somewhere in a box around here, we've still got our copy of the genuine leather-bound, annotated PTL Bible that I think my grandmother paid about $500 for.
God, did they rip off some people, didn't they?
Oh, and yeah, they did, and built a water slide. Oh, my God.
Absolutely. And as far as last night debate is concerned, Bob, I didn't even watch it. There was another thing on PBS about Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks and the contributions they made through Hollywood and United Artists and stuff like that. And I found that program much more enjoyable and less upsetting than to see these two guys sit there and sling shit at each other.
Yeah, I can see where you would. I had a number of notes, Jim, saying, sorry, just couldn't do it. Our buddy Reverbo dropped me a note and said, we lasted about 7 minutes. And that was typical. More than one note just saying, couldn't do it, took a pass, but we'll all be there Sunday night for because it's going to get exciting Sunday night Benito Cheeto and Hillary are going to have a town hall style debate.
Mm.
So it's going to be a completely different format. And I enjoyed, because, you know, it's my job to pay attention to this stuff.
Right.
Somebody's got to take one for the team, right? So the after coverage, where on channel after channel after channel after channel, Jim, you know what I heard people saying? That Mike Pence had thrown Donald Trump under the bus.
Yeah, he should be the one running as president.
He served notice that he was going to be back in 2020. And that should be remembered, because way back in the era of dim leader, Mike Pence was hailed as one of the smart conservatives and the future of the party. Now, I got some fun Mike Pence stuff for later that sort of puts all that in perspective, but yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to ask those questions, and now they're cleared up. And by the way, let me applaud Carol Baker for the two of the nightstand or whatever. She never ceases to amaze me and to cause me just to laugh, and I always enjoy her conversations very much.
Well, that's very kind of you. You'd be, if we ever moved to video, the people would see me constantly muting my microphone here, because otherwise it would just be a series of snorts, grunts, and guffaws.
Well,
the nightstand comment just, well,
right.
it slayed me.
Well, Carol, if you're listening, I think you're a worthy asset to this program, and I always enjoy you and your subtle wit, and sometimes, well, when you have to use it, your wit can cut like a samurai sword.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you, Jim. You and Rufus have a wonderful evening.
Okay, you too, and thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Jim, not too awfully far from here. Yeah, Carol said, I had a hell of a good time tweeting the debate. I was pretty much convinced Madame Tussauds was missing one of their wax figures watching racist Bannon. It was just as good with the sound down. It was Chris fucking Matthews saying he was gearing up for a run in 2020 because he was just so presidential. But that's the thing, Carol. It was, I mean, it was Chris Matthews, but it wasn't just Chris Matthews. I mean, it was click 2020, click 2020, click 2020. Not that I was clicking, but I was using TuneIn to follow all of the commentary, the after party, if you will. And I mean, that was because everybody was, hey, wait. And I don't know. Maybe Pence is the only one that Trump couldn't have taken down. But here's the problem. There's the Donald Trump that Pence refused to acknowledge exists, and then there's the Donald Trump that Pence refused to acknowledge exists. Every time Tim Kaine threw something out there and said, hey, yeah, but he said this. And, no, he didn't. And see the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks. Well, see, he didn't really say that Mexicans was rapists. Jim, by the way, Carol says thank you very kindly. And Carol notes the way Pence was talking about Don, I was wondering if they'd ever actually met. I was actually picking up Margie from Hillmart when I heard Pence say, well, you're the ones with the insult-driven campaign. You called people deplorable. And I was, you know, you beg the goddess of irony and sometimes. And, oh, please let him say, please, but you knew he wouldn't. Please let him say, that's okay because half your voters don't know the meaning of the word. I was born in America. I'm not deplorable. Not like I'm a Mexican. I'm going to get deplored. Yeah. And by the way, did you notice the pin? The pin that Tim Kaine, if you watched it, did you notice the pin that Tim Kaine was wearing? Precious little right-wingers are having a hissy because Mike Pence is a good, God-fearing American. That's why he wears a American flag pin. Where's your pin? A pledge pin? But that heathen papist Tim Kaine, he weren't wearing no pin. He weren't wearing no American flag pin. He's wearing some kind of different pin. Maybe that's a Pope pin. Maybe that's a papist pin. Maybe he's going to take all his orders from that liberal communist Pope Frank. Yeah, there's only one problem. One wing nut somewhere thought he was wearing a Honduran flag pin. But it was actually a Blue Star Families pin. People who have members, who have family members who are actually serving in the military often wear that pin to note their support of active duty military. This, of course, means that Donald Trump will not and cannot ever wear that pin that Tim Kaine was wearing. Because, you know, Donald Trump's already given all the service his family owes to this country by going to a military junior high school. And yeah, as Carol notes, Trump was simultaneously tweeting insults at Tim Kaine while at the same time that racist Bannon was claiming that Hillary was the insult artist. The goddess of irony was watching last night. And there were more than a few moments. You know, I mentioned something because she's a good goddess. I mentioned something last night about Donald Wildman, or maybe it was Monday night. They all run together. and how he made his early bones going after cartoon characters, most particularly the Roadrunner, Bugs Bunny. Yeah. And then there's the long history of going after cartoon characters. Jerry Falwell got upset about Tinky Winky because Tinky Winky was purple and Tinky Winky's symbol was a triangle, and everybody knows that's a Homer sectional drag queen symbol, and Tinky Winky carried a purse. I forget who. James Dobson, the guy who advised men, full-grown men, to take their young four, five, six-year-old sons into the shower with them naked and slap them in the face with their penises a few times to keep them from catching the homosexuality. He got all upset at SpongeBob SquarePants and Patrick the Starfish because they were gay because Patrick was pink. There's lots of these. There really, really are. Well, it turns out that racist Bannon, otherwise known as Mike Pence, the vice presidential nominee, if you didn't know this is true. Once upon a time, he was a conservative thought leader. And he wrote conservative things, and he was a conservative hate radio broadcaster, and he broadcasted conservative thought leader-y things. But yes, back in the 90s, once upon a time, racist Bannon, Mike Pence, got all in high dudgeon about the military. BuzzFeed found it. And of its sort, it's a beautiful piece of art. Among other things, he wrote, when Indiana Congressman Steve Beyer was appointed to investigate the Aberdeen mess, he shocked the public with the revelation that young, nubile 18-year-old men and women were actually being housed together during basic training. What if her bonehead came up with this idea? She'd be run out of this man's army before sundown. Housing in close quarters. Young men and women, in some cases married to non-military personnel, at the height of their physical and sexual potential, is the height of stupidity. Now, he wrote this not necessarily about that topic, but as BuzzFeed reports, because he was mad at the movie Mulan. Yeah, I know. He was quite sure back in 1999, that Mulan by the Disney Corporation was a liberal plot. Well, you know, it did feature a voiceover of a dragon by Eddie Murphy, and he does have that, you know, that thing for transgendered people. I mean, you know, I mean, just saying, not saying.
Just saying, not saying.
Getting all breathless, racist Bannon, Mike Pence, wrote, despite her delicate features and voice, Disney expects us to believe that Mulan's ingenuity and courage were enough to carry her to military success on an equal basis with her cloddish cohorts. Obviously, this is Walt Disney's attempt to add childhood expectation to the cultural debate over the role of women in the military. I suspect that some mischievous liberal at Disney assumes that Mulan's story will cause a quiet change in the next generation's attitude about women in combat, and they just might be right. Just think about how often we think of Bambi every time the subject of deer hunting comes into the mainstream media debate.
It is instructive that even in the Disney film, young Miss Mulan falls in love with her superior officer. Methinks the politically correct Disney types completely missed the irony of this part of the story. They likely added it because it added realism with which the viewer could identify with the characters. You see, now, stay with me on this. Many young men find many young women to be attractive sexually. Many young women find many young men to be attractive sexually. Put them together in close quarters for long periods of time, and things will get interesting. Just like they eventually did for young Mulan. Moral of story, women in military, bad idea. God, you can almost hear his Fu Manchu mustache growing at the end of that. I'll take that as a compliment. Brother Deacon Gerald pointing out that monologue sounded a little like Hedley Lamarr. Thank you for at least getting the Hedley part right. That's special, and I thank you very kindly, Gerald.
God darn it, you use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
I keep that handy for just such occasions. Jen lets me know, even Politico managed a piece of actual investigative journalism, dug up footage from round about the same time of Pence demanding that there be strict laws against adultery. Jen wonders, how many affairs and how many marriages has had Trump? Affairs, we don't know. That's an uncertain sum, greater than three. Marriages is at three. Children by those marriages, five. Can you imagine? I mean, look, Hillary Clinton would never even have dared to run for office had she been married three times and had five kids by three separate spouses. You know, because patriarchy. Ay, ay, ay. And the thing is, this stuff was out there. This isn't hidden. But of course, if that cipher who pretended to be a moderator last night, had she actually asked any of these questions of Mike Pence, pointing out that the man is, I mean, you know, goddamn, he's governor of Talibandiana in the first place. That he is a theocratic freak no less than any mullah anywhere in any dictatorial state. Well, that wouldn't have been fair, would it? Because we have to present the two sides as being roughly, you know, equal. Meanwhile, the right wing is giving Tim Kaine down the road. And there's stuff to give Tim Kaine down the road over. You know, his support for right to work, among other things. But they're giving him down the road for, what? Oh, yeah, for being a lawyer who defended people charged with crimes. Many of whom were, wrong colored. And now they're after him for the Jesuits that he ran around with when he was a kid doing missionary work in Honduras. One of whom was a priest who was murdered by Honduran military who had been taught how to do those murders at the School of the Americas run by, we the people. Oh, God damn it, he was a Marxist!
You know, we're almost exactly 1 month away from the election, and I'm saying and thinking the same damn thing I was thinking 12 months ago. God damn, it's going to be a long way to November the 8th. Let's figure this out now. What are you drinking for the next debate? Or for that matter, what are you smoking? Or, you know, jamming into your neck with an auto injector? Because, and here's the tough part. I have to deep throat that garden hose on Monday morning at like 8, which is totally going to suck, because it means I'm going to have to be up at 5. Now, up at 5, out the door, down the mountain to Charleston. And I have to be nihil per os, NPO, after midnight. And that probably precludes putting a straw in a tequila bottle anywhere around 9 p.m. I'm guessing there would be interactions with the anesthesia. So come Sunday night, I'm going to have to watch the town hall pageant between the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini and Hillary Clinton, totally sober, absolutely unaltered, not sideways in any form or fashion. You talk about lash to the mast. we get lots of people in at the same time on Skype. Jen asks, I mean, like Friday on the front porch, I think, what, Sparky, up to 19 people? Because, and I was planning on doing this anyway, a special election night edition of Friday on the front porch, Tuesday on the, and I'll come up with something alliterative later, Tuesday on the election night, telephone poll, Jen asks, how many people could call on Skype at one time? I'm thinking a group hug on election night. Probably a good idea, and we will do that. We'll have coverage. Jen says, we need to huddle together. And then, are you fucking kidding me? Oh my God, Bob, don't face it sober. I have no choice, Jen. They scheduled this. I can't reschedule. It has to be done. As for the trip to Charleston, Brother Deacon, Gerald says, but Bob, it's only 50 miles. Non-hillbillies will never know the pain of that last statement. And it's the 50 miles that I can't drive home that's particularly bothersome. Agnes is an excellent driver. It's just that I'm a very bad passenger. She'll have to stuff me in the back seat, use both seat belts on me, and probably engage the childproof locks. Have I mentioned that I don't do anesthesia very well? Not even the Twilight stuff. What? And then pretty quick, you start feeling, hey, you know, I'm feeling pretty damn good. And then you get up and walk around, and you're like, oh, I think I'm going to lay down on the floor for a while now, thanks. Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, you're only making it worse, Marty. Marty says, group hug? How about a group drink? Steve pointing out, drinking for the next debate. If I watch it, it'll be Drano. I'll either die a martyr or live as a miracle. Easy, Steve. Easy. Oh, yeah, Robert pointing out, since speaking of Johnny Quest, if you're looking for a show to binge watch to get away from the election, may I suggest The Venture Brothers. Despite being around since 2003, there are only 6 seasons of varying lengths. It's an adult animated parody of Johnny Quest and definitely not one for the kiddies. I've seen The Venture Brothers, and yes, I like The Venture Brothers. Barkway, Carolyn, in the chat room, subject line, we're in Matthew's path. So we're in the path of Matthew, as are my brother. Lots of friends and many Twitter and Bob Kincaid chat friends. We have no shutters. Can't afford them. We're good on supplies, I think, and spent hours up on the hot tile roof today cementing down loose tiles so I don't take out the neighbors' homes with flying barrel tiles. I worry about the stray animals and the wildlife that will have to endure the elements unprotected. Had a mom duck hatch eggs today in my yard, and a neighbor called me about a mortally wounded duck that had been attacked by a dog that was floating at the edge of the lake in her yard. I can do nothing for these helpless creatures, and my heart aches for them. All we can do is wait and watch and keep each other close. Pray Matthew's not too devastating for us. Not for you or for anybody else, Carolyn. Hunker down, and no, we will hope for the best. And I'm glad to know you've got your supplies laid in. You know, Cat 4 hurricane, furthest south a hurricane's ever formed in the Atlantic hurricane basin. But this has nothing to do with climate change. Absolutely nothing. Poor ducks. Thanks for letting us know, and please keep us posted tomorrow and Friday as well. Be well. Be well. And it's 7 minutes before the hour. We have two challenges on the table, neither of which have been responded to in any way since I announced them. There's $165 worth of challenges on the table, courtesy of Carol's Leave It on the Nightstand challenge and Bob in Texas's $100 challenge, which would take it would all but eliminate the fundraising hole. Because we're including $100 for Monday night. There's another $100 to do. But, it is as yet unresponded to. Please don't let this go unresponded. Please don't let challenges go by the boards. Because they're put out there in the hopes that we can keep funding going and not get in trouble. And October has bills in it just like any other. And, in fact, October has more bills in it. Because of the incredibly expensive metered bandwidth that I had to use while Frontier was busy parking us a couple of weeks back. And that went on for more days than I care to mention. So that's all part of it. $165 to double whatever you send in up to $165. Five becomes 10, 10 becomes 20. And these are very, very generous offers. Please don't let them blow by. Thank you very much. Let's run over to Skype and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob. How the hell are you?
I'm pretty good. You're kind of far away again.
Can you not hear me? Is this better?
I think your Bluetooth is not the Bluetooth thing.
Well, actually, what's up is that I'm not even using Bluetooth. I'm using regular earbuds. My Bluetooth. Is that better?
I've got you potted up about as much as I can. I can hear you, and I think everybody else can, too.
Okay, cool. So, for binge-watching, because, I'm starting to really action pictures on Netflix, and I'm paying for, have you watched Luke Cage yet on Netflix?
I got the first episode. And apparently, the tender fee-fees of some white wingers are really feeling kind of bruised, aren't they?
Yeah, they're because, it's not diverse enough. There's no diversity. But, black people.
Yeah, they want diversity in pre-gentrification Harlem.
Right. And it just, because I bench watched the whole first season. And I was just waiting for that. There's just too many black people. There were all the white people. And so, of course, yesterday I saw that article, Luke Cage, too black. And it's just like, for real, dog? Yeah, because when you're talking about diversity, I don't remember seeing very many black people on Friends and Seinfeld. at any other show that was, you know, based in New York. Yeah, except to the city. Those three shows were incredibly white. And I didn't hear anybody crying about, you know, the lack of diversity when those shows were on, did you?
Well, no, because that's that didn't count, Tracy.
Right, right. It's just, you know, cry those white tears somewhere else. And then we have Tim Burton. Did you hear about this idiot that actually just passed the billboard for Miss Peregrine's or whatever school for unusual children or whatever the title of the movie is? And this one young woman, I don't know how old she was, but she's a huge fan of Tim Burton because, you know, in his movies, everybody is weird, but it's okay to be weird and stuff like that. But she notices that, you know, where are the black people? Except for, you know, Samuel L. Jackson, who plays the villain. And it pissed me, because I meant to send you that article, because Samuel Jackson really pissed me off. But I did notice that I guess I am the first black person and one of Tim Burton's movies and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, he's a really good guy. And I'm like, really? Sam, that's all you got? But Tim Burton was like, well, you know, I was back in the, you know, what? I don't see what the big deal is. You know, it's about this diversity thing. When I was a kid, I watched the Brady Bunch, and, you know, they tried to do the diversity thing by putting on an Asian kid and the black kid.
What were you doing? Wait. What were you doing watching the Brady Bunch? Or was he saying that?
That was Tim Burton.
Okay, because, I mean, I didn't think you'd say that, because you knew better. I mean, we gave you good times, okay?
Right, exactly. And again, I didn't. They brought that up too. You didn't trip about, you know, no white people on Good Times. Oh yeah.
I think we lost Tracy. Let me check again. Did we lose you, Tracy? Yeah, we lost Tracy. Speaking of binge watching, Carol Baker points out my new binge watch, One Mississippi, on Amazon Prime. Gallows humor, but so good. And a radio host is the central character, and I love it. I checked out episode one, and it looked pretty promising. And I'm trying to. Carol says, "Oh my gosh, keep watching! I need the giggle." We'll add that to the. Speaking of the Brady Bunch, we'll add that to the Mike and Carol bedstead viewing list. I checked out the first episode of the BBC's Bleak House. Based on the incredibly long novel, and they all are, by Charles Dickens. We must remember that Dickens was paid by the not by the word, but by the letter. It can take him 20, 30 pages to describe a toenail clipping, and it will have a very, very clever name, the toenail clipping. Jen says, oh, Bob, plays expline. She spells it that way. I don't want to get any grief for my bad Australian accent. Plays expline, Star Trek Enterprise. We found it on Netflix last night. How could we have missed an entire Star Trek series? Is it awful? No, it's not awful. Now, some people hated it. I rather enjoyed it. I thought it had an element of reality to it that, because we're the benign Vulcans and, you know, with their non-emotionalism and their pure logic, they're kind of annoying. But I like the idea of the Vulcans being people that we really didn't trust at the outset and who would, in fact, periodically shiv us for being the uncivilized, hairless primates that we are, because we couldn't be trusted because we're all emotional and nasty and bloodthirsty as humans. They were kind of Romulan that way. And, of course, the Vulcans and the Romulans are really... There's some great storylines. Jolene Blaylock, I thought, was wonderful. I thought Scott Bakula was really good. But the email is piling up right now. See, there it is. Marty, Enterprise was okay. Just okay. Those were not Vulcans. They were actually Romulans. No, I think when people's we've got this in human experience, when different cultures meet, they don't automatically just get along famously. God, that was like the late 90s, early aughts is when it happened, Jen. So sit down, watch it, tell me what you think. Maybe you'll hate it too. I didn't. You know, there was a little less of the technical mumbo jumbo, and I thought it, for a program with a bunch of damn space aliens in it, I thought it surprisingly more human. And I think Scott Bakula is a good actor, and like I said, Jolene Blaylock was wonderful, excellent actress, actor. Damn it, Bob, stop it, Spock. Among other characters were really, really enjoyable as well. Dr. Phlox, yeah, he was fun. I recognized him, and I recognized people I've known in him. But it was... It's a far cry better than the damn J.J. Abrams reboot. Basically, it's Star Trek prehistory. Let's see if we've got Tracy back. Any better, Tracy?
Stupid ass phone.
The earphone cord hickey is none too great either. I have to tell you. You just got better.
Oh, good. So you know how there was that long debate the other day about stuff, iPhone. And Mac and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because they just work. Well, I have the 7 Plus. And it works. Well, it does to a certain extent. This is my first time using the earphones because now, there's no actual earphone jack. So the earphones that come with the iPhone have the dongle if you want to just use your regular earphones. But the earphones that come with the iPhone actually have the lightning cord.
Yeah, they go straight into the power supply jack.
Yeah, that thing. And so this is my first time using it. So you guys are
I don't want to bum you out. The previous phone was better.
Yeah. And the only reason why I got the 7 was because my 6 finally the button to turn it on and off that broke. So I'm like, well, I might as well just go ahead and get the 7 because, I can't. And of course, I've been having issues with it, like dropping calls and the screen freezing.
If I may be so bold as to ask, who are you with carrier wise?
AT&T.
Okay, because, Chris in Germany and I have a running dialogue about nerdy technology stuff, and she sent me an article. People on Verizon are having the devil's own time with the 7 and the 7 Plus. I mean, the LTE falls out, the calls drop, and some people can't get it back until they cycle the phone and turn it off and turn it on again. Some people have to go to airplane mode, turn it on to airplane mode, turn it off airplane mode, and it comes back. Oy.
No. Well, I'll let Jan know because her company phone is an iPhone. She has a 6. I don't think she has a 6 Plus, but she has a 6. And she's like, well, my phone's tripping, so I'll get a new one. but the carrier for her company's carrier is Verizon. So I'm like, no, stay on the phone then. Because you're not going to be really happy. She's less of a technophile than I am. I'm not a technophobe. She's a technophobe. So she yells at me constantly because she's like, I don't know what you've done to the TV. I can't figure it out. You know, no matter how many times I show her, because everything's on one remote, you know, and I show her how to do it, and it doesn't matter how many times I show her what to do, she still feels that our TV sets are possessed by the devil. And so it's Satan's way of keeping her from watching Dancing with the Stars. Actually, that's me booby-trapping the TV so she can't watch Dancing with the Stars. But I digress.
Oh, fortunately, Jan won't be listening. Yeah. I don't know. For people who haven't yet, I'm hanging on to my old 6 Plus for as long as it'll last. The battery's fading, but it's not gone. But, hey, a battery case is cheaper than a new phone. And right. I'm just going to make the thing, you know, I mean, I've already had it for 2 years, and it works, finally. So,
well, I figure the only reason Apple has this plan that, you know, you don't have to, doesn't matter what carrier you have, you just pay them for the phone, which works out nice because you get Apple Care Plus. So
and a new one every year, right?
A new, or even every 6 months if you want to do that, but it's not that serious for me. But it just so happens my year was up, so I could do a new contract when I got the phone. But, you know, I like the fact that, well, I'll probably never leave AT&T because I'm grandfathered into unlimited data.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I love it when I call, you know, if I have a problem with my bill or something, and invariably the rep on the other end, you know, customer service rep was like, well, Ms. Porter, you know you'll save X amount of dollars a month if you, you know, switch to, you know, the whatever gigabyte plan that they have. Like, no.
No, no. I'm special. You know, right, exactly.
Since I have such a much bigger screen, I am now, you know, I binge watch a lot of stuff, especially when I'm waiting for Will.
Well, and that's why we took it on the chin like we did metered bandwidth when I had to use cell phone connectivity to get the program out for a week.
Right.
And to run the rerun stream, you know, for a week.
And exactly. And so every so often I get text messages, and I had a bother to call the bitch at him yet. Well, you know, just check it. Doing 20 to 30 gigabytes a month on my phone because I'm watching, you know, I have Hulu and Netflix, and every so often I'll watch stuff on, you know, my HBO or Showtime app, depending on my mood. And then also my Time Warner app, because I could watch stuff on Time Warner. I could watch some live TV. And I could also watch on-demand titles on my phone. So I'm like, no, I'm good. Because there's never going to be a plan that, even if I pay less money, that will get me 20-some-odd gigs a month.
So I got to ask you, because among other things, we had talked about how good and how clear your Bluetooth actually was.
Right, and I think it's because I don't know why it's tripping. I don't know if it's because of my iPhone, of the new iPhone, or it could be the fact that Kimba, took my Bluetooth for a chill toy.
Yeah, so, I'm guessing that's probably it.
You know, and just one
word of warning: if you're a gadget nerd. When they become available 10 days from now, you're going to say to yourself, Tracy, and you're going to say,
I'm not doing it.
And why don't we go get the new Apple earpods?
Not happening.
Okay, I'm kind of glad to hear that.
Okay, so yes, there are parts of me. I am a bit of a tech nerd. You know, the only reason, it's so funny because, you know, you talk about the iPhone 6. The iPhone 6 is my first even number iPhone because I had the 3, didn't have the 4, and I had the 5. And the only reason why I got the 6 was because my 5 just gave up the ghost. It wouldn't hold a charge. It just, you know, it was falling apart. And I had it for 2 years, almost 2.5 years. And I was hoping it would hold out until the 7 came out, because that's typically how my phones were working. But it's like, no. So I had to get the 6. So,
wow. Forgive me if I say first world tenacity. And I'm sitting here saying, I've had 2 years. Yeah.
The
humanity, oh the suffering.
You know, these first world problems that we have. You know, sometimes when I hear myself talk, I want to slap myself. You know, because we have people worrying about hurricanes and stuff like that, and I'm crying over a goddamn phone. Wow, it's like sometimes you got to reel yourself back and say, seriously, kids. For real, dog, do you hear yourself talking? But the good thing is, at least when I do catch myself, I'm like, oh, man, that's just gross. I'm learning. Like the other day, I went to church on Sunday, and I hugged two people that I've had tremendous issues with, and I said, because I'm like, you know what? Healing begins with me. And if I have problems, and usually the people that you have problems with have no idea you have problems with them, or they may. And so I took it upon myself. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be the one that's going to try to be a better person and do better. So I helped a couple of people. And boy, that shocked the hell out of them. You know, and my hug was, it was in all sincerity because I'm tired of being bitter and resentful. Because what good does it do? I'm tired of being that person that's holding on to stuff from the past. Because if you're holding, you know, basically I don't want to be a Republican. Or right winger. I'm being that person that I can't stand. And I'm like, you know what? This has got to end. So, and actually, that's part of my therapy as well, because I'm going to start back to therapy. And I've realized that a lot of the things that hold me back is anger and bitterness. And it's like that I'm constant, you know, like I don't think I'm jealous of other people, but sometimes you look at people and what they've done, and then you're thinking, well, what have I done with my life? And I guess that's more so resentment. I don't know. But I have to realize that I've done, even though, you know, I don't have my degree yet, and I haven't done this, I've done that, I've done a lot with my life. I've raised an amazing son. I have a, you know, wonderful wife. I've helped people along the way. So I'm like, okay, you know, you have those pity parties. But I'm trying to be a nicer person because we both know how ugly I can be because you heard me cuffing. and you heard some of the things that I've said about your cuffing. But they're true.
Right. And you only said them because they are. Right. I get that.
Because they are. Like, you know, when Mike Pence last night tried to pull out. And I think that was like when I texted you, and I just like, you know, well, your campaign is full of, you know, insulted people as well. And I'm like, is he really going to go there with that one insult or whatever that Hillary said about deplorables that, you know, she apologized for?
Well, see, Tracy, I hate milquetoast politics. And I hate it when our side won't fight back. I mean, I don't want us to I don't want our side to behave and, you know, saying Hillary's our side. I know. Quit telling people how to vote, Bob. Right. But you know what the right answer to that business about Hillary's deplorable comment would have been?
But they are deplorable.
No, I'll give it to you. This is free. Well, Mike, Donald Trump has been endorsed by the Klan. Are you suggesting that the Klan isn't deplorable, Mike? And if you're, and could it be that you're suggesting the Klan isn't deplorable because there's a huge Klan presence in your state of Indiana and in your Republican Party in Indiana? Mike. And then all he could do would be to sit there and spit at the camera. Cause it's fucking true, Tracy.
Right.
I mean, I actually, it's a pity I did it, but I killed out a tab just earlier this evening from some exalted Kleagle or Grand Wizard or Ultimate Dragon or, Super Saiyan, who said, yeah, all my buddies in the Klan are doing everything we can to work for the election of Donald Trump.
Right.
And but no. That just would have been that would have been mean for Tim Kaine to do that. But you know, the thing is with bullies, sometimes you have to punch a bully in the face. I'm as kumbaya as the next guy, Tracy.
No, not in the face, dude. Punch him in the balls.
Because nobody can see somebody's balls that have been kicked, but when a bully's walking around with his bloody ass nose splattered all over his ugly, hateful face, people go, "Hey, look! Somebody stood up to the fucking bully."
Right.
And just once, I want somebody to respond to the deplorable critique that way. Donald Trump is supported by the Klan. Donald Trump had to think twice about David Duke's endorsement. Grand Dragon, Ultimate Wizard, Super Saiyan, David Duke endorsed Donald Trump. Are you suggesting that David Duke isn't deplorable?
Exactly.
And then let him live with it.
Whether he answers or not. I was pretty much screaming the same thing too. It's like again, we're so polite and PC. This election, we don't have time to be polite and PC. We're fighting for our lives. Do you guys not get that? That's what, you know, because I keep hearing people, well, Hillary's ahead, and I said, didn't we point this out, during the primary? That more Republicans voted in the primary than came out to vote for Hillary and Bernie combined.
Yeah, this is not a gimme. Not by any stretch of the imagination.
And I keep trying to tell my friends, I'm like, are you not understanding? The racists they haven't been this happy since Wallace and what's the other fool? Who Hillary used to work, who she was a...
Oh, Goldwater?
Campaign. Yes. The racists haven't been this happy since Goldwater. Because the hoods are off, the hoods are on, like you said, and they're happy to wear them in public. And they're being, and it's now acceptable. People have been waiting for this moment since the Yankees kicked the Confederate's asses. They have been waiting. People are rejoicing. Dead people are rejoicing right now. Because now there is the absolute chance that they will have the country that they have been waiting for the last 300 fucking years. And I don't think people really get it. Do you? Like these people that are voting for, talking about voting for Jill freaking Stein, or just saying, I'm not going to vote.
Oh, there you are. Really? No. No, I'm gonna get I Hate Tracy mails now because you just told people how to vote. You just offended the unicorn cavalry.
I don't. They can kiss my happy black ass at this point. They really can,
talking about her, even mentioning her is kind of silly because, well, you know, I mean, less than 1%, right?
Yeah, but see.
But Ron Paul endorsed her over Gary Johnson, the Libertarian. I mean, Ron. Yeah, cranky old Uncle Ron. Yeah, he said he prefers Jill Stein over.
Ooh, and that shit right there should be enough for you to say, oh, no, let me backpedal on this one.
Gut check.
You know, again, I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, like you said, the unicorn faction of our party and stuff. I'm sorry. If anybody has heard me on this show, I have railed against Hillary, especially during the primaries, and even so now. How whenever?
Yeah, and by the way, you got a note from Jen in Australia. She says Tracy needs to cut herself some slack. I admire her self-reflection, self-responsibility, but my experience in PA a few months back, oh my God, we have some really nasty-ass fellow citizens. And that's the absolutely truth.
There are some people that you just can't reach.
And the thing is, but the thing is, that number keeps going higher.
Exactly. That number keeps going higher because I keep trying to my lovely wife, who because of me has become more politically aware that she's had in her entire adult life.
And assuming for a minute, and I think this is a dangerous assumption, Tracy, assuming for a minute that Hillary wins and we get a 4-year fucking onslaught of Hillary hatred and misogyvaginitis from the right wing, which we will, that number may top 50% by 2020. And last night was Mike Pence serving notice. He's going to be back with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, you know, maybe the tell Mike Pence about your period movement may need to go nationwide. Every woman in America may need to. That stupid bastard wants to make women who have abortions pay for a full-on funeral for a little wad of tissue that would be unrecognizable in a goddamn toilet bowl.
Oh, my God. Did he say that during the debate?
No.
Like I said,
that wouldn't have been according to the Marcus of Queensberry rules, you know, to hit him with his reality. I mean, what if Tim Kaine would have looked at him and said, dude, you get mad at cartoon characters. And you want to be a heartbeat away from the presidency?
Well, what
are you going to do? Nuke the fucking squidbillies if you become president? Oh, wait, like early Kyler. You're his kind of people.
What about, you know, I love how you said, you know, these people getting all up in arms about cartoons and all this. I don't remember anybody getting all up in arms about the racist cartoons. You know, like Heckle and Jekyll and Blackbird and Dumbo and, you know, that. And early Warner Brothers cartoons like that. You know, those weren't detrimental and damaging. Oh, but wait. It was only because it was, you know, it was making fun of black people. I'm sorry. Silly me.
Yeah, I know.
But see, you know what frightens me the most, you know, when people don't get how scary a Trump Pence administration would be. Because I really feel that these are the kind of people that would have no problems with putting people in re-education camps. And that's what I try to, you know, like all my gay friends.
Oh, no. But if you were listening a couple of nights ago, Tracy, you know. Sandy Rios is sitting around just waiting for the FBI to show up and take her to the Hillary re-education camp so we can make her get gay married and have Kenyan abortions. I mean, they put that shit out there seriously. I mean, now you just said, and I kind of joke about, you know, when they put us in the FEMA re-education camps, I'll be the one selling cigarettes under the Southwest Guard Tower. But we all know we're joking because none of us are going to go there. I mean, we wouldn't go. But, and the likelihood of it happening, I mean, really, under Barack Obama? I mean, really?
Right.
But he's a different Barack Obama to them. And Hillary is a different Hillary. Hillary is the Hillary of their most fevered imaginings. So, you know, there's that. But you know, they really believe it. Hey, Tracy, I got a roll here, but it has been delightful talking to you, and I hope you get a new Bluetooth. I kind of do. But well, don't get the ear pods. Oh my God, you're going to look like you're walking around with two electric toothbrush heads hanging out of your ears.
That is not good. I have more self-respect for myself. I can't do it. I think they're like kind of really expensive too.
Well, they'll be like $159, and the audio is the same audio you're getting out of those earbuds right now. It's not like high quality.
It's not like I'm getting the beats or something like that. So yeah, nah, I'm cool. I am so cool with that. So on that note, happy trails. Thank you for listening to my rant. And we will talk again soon.
Be careful. Be careful making the transition onto the 6 7/8, okay?
I will. I'll talk to you.
Later, Tracy. Bye. Bye now. Let's see. Technology review. We didn't work in... We really didn't work in any food porn. Politics. By the way, Carol Baker pointing out, FEMA re-education camp loudspeaker. Bob Kincaid, report immediately to the basement of the Trotsky building. Bob Kincaid to the Trotsky building. Not the Trotsky building. And of course the ice rink will be it'll be the Lubyanka ice rink. Yeah. By the way, after last night, just a quick observation. You know who the three unhappiest people in America were after last night? Uh-oh. It's got, yeah, the basement of the Trotsky building. It gave the horrors to Jen, too. Not the basement. Spiders or rats, Bob? No! Pistols! That scratchy feeling right behind your ear. The three unhappiest people in America after last night's vice presidential debate were Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time. Tom, I can eat 50 eggs, and they all got stuck in my throat, cotton. And Ben, S-A-S-S-E, is that a silent, Ben, S-A-S-S-E, is that a silent E, sassy of Nebraska. Because they all had their conservative mantles out at the cleaners, getting ready to put them on and start running the minute that Donald Trump flamed out and corkscrewed into the ground. Because see, they just knew that they could talk to America and give all the conservative talking points and light up the fascists the same way Trump has, without doing the stupid shit that Trump has, and thereby have a clear path to victory, the White House, and a bright fascist future in America. After last night, with the dual-wheeled tire tracks across Donald Trump's orange hide from where Mike Pence had chucked him under the bus, that's not so clear. Because there were little wing nuts all over America going, yeah, kind of like this guy, Marveline. I mean, he's talking true conservatism. But I bet he wants to build a beautiful wall, too. I feel really, really stupid and or paranoid talking about the 2020 presidential election before the 2016 has even happened. But this is not your usual presidential election. And these are not ordinary times. We are cursed. We are cursed according to the terms of that ancient, most ancient of curses. May you live in interesting times. And this is really interesting. Meanwhile, at least one person, at least one expert, Alan Lichtman, a history professor at American University in Washington with a long history of getting presidential elections right. He's correctly predicted the winner of every presidential election since Ronnie Reagan beat Walter Mondale. He's actually predicting that Trump could win the popular vote. Now, as we saw in 2000, that's no guarantee of victory. But, yeah. At the same time that he said that this is the most difficult election by far to predict accurately, Professor Lichtman said that Trump could win the popular vote. How's that for sobering with 26 minutes to go in the program? Speaking of which, with 26 minutes to go in the program, $40 of Carol's nightstand challenge has been met. 40 out of 65. Thank you to Glenn, and thank you to Charlene. $25 remain on that, and then $100 remain on Bob in Texas's challenge, which would get us done with fundraising and leave us with just a little bit to deal with in terms of compensating for Monday. So $125 of challenge remains on the table. $125. Your 5 becomes 10. It gets doubled. These things don't happen all the time. And when they do, it's an excellent opportunity to make your contribution count even more than it already does. And it counts a lot. Let's see. Let's check in with Punky and Scott. What's happening?
Hey, Bob.
Is Punky still blissing out on the new feed?
No, he was taking a nap earlier, and then he noticed I was having a potato chip or two, so he flew over to my shoulder to scarf some, and now he's back. Well, now he's eating his bird food, so.
You stiffed him on the potato chip, in other words.
No, I gave him a couple of bites. The birds are not supposed to have salty stuff, but I figure every now and again it shouldn't hurt him.
Well, at 19, it hasn't so far.
No, not yet. And he loves Chex Mix.
Oh.
Who
doesn't?
His little comb on top of his head just perked up when I said Chex Mix.
Yeah, see, that, I mean, worrying about salt with a 19-year-old cockatiel, it reminds me of the story that my dad used to tell me about the old fella around here. He smoked and he drank as much as he wanted to. And all the good Baptist ladies said, you know, that's going to kill you someday. And it did. And when they buried him at 97, most of the Baptist ladies weren't around to talk about how his smoking and drinking was going to kill him.
Yeah. Well, it's like George Burns about, good Lord, maybe 35 years ago, he wrote a book. And he dedicated it to two or three former physicians of his who advised him not to smoke cigars and not to drink martinis every day, all two or three of whom were dead, long dead, you know? And it's like my a couple of calls ago, I talked about my two great-great-aunts, Aunt Emma and Aunt F, who both died at 95, okay? And they would eat whatever they wanted, fried foods, you know, they used to make hellacious good fried oysters, you know, but I mean, they cooked with lard, you know, it was all a matter of attitude, I think, with those old folks. On my mother's side of the family, the women live without exception to their upper 80s or even low to mid 90s.
And one, they worked constantly.
Yeah.
They had a high activity level. And two, they were not consuming nearly as many weird-ass chemicals as we do.
Oh, right. And the weird thing about my maternal grandmother, who we used to call Nanny, my dad, who met my mother, or who the woman who would be my mother in the mid-40s, said that from the day he met Nanny, that she was claimed to be knocking on death's door. Okay, because of her close encounter with the 1918 flu epidemic. And the weird thing was, she didn't learn to drive until she was 65, I think, after her husband died in the late 50s. And she had this 1960 or 61 Comet, if you remember those cars. And she had the little statue of Jesus not looking in at her, but looking out to the oncoming traffic. And she would drive. I mean, her hands would be at 10 and 2 on the wheel. And she would race like a bat out of hell, like the little old lady from Pasadena and that little white Comet of hers. And the only time she would complain about the wretched state of her health is if she didn't have somewhere to go or something to do. And she got the ultimate joy of her life in the 60s, she took an organized bus trip or train trip out to the West Coast to attend a taping of the Lawrence Welk show and got to dance with the old maestro himself. And we asked her, how was it? And she said, wonderful, wonderful. You know, thank you, boys. Turn on the bubble machine. But anyway, I wanted to chime in about the debate a little bit.
Oh, do please.
The vice presidential debate. Mike Pence freaks the hell out of me.
Okay, so I would say creeps me out, but yeah.
Yeah, he first of all, his eyes are set too close together, first of all. He looks like he's up to no good, okay? He even resembles Putin a little bit, okay? But he's just a snarky-looking character. And with some of the lame comebacks that he was utilizing during the so-called debate last night, I couldn't believe that he actually had a background in talk radio, because he was pretty damn slow on the uptake, in my humble estimation. And Tim Kaine missed a couple of golden opportunities, because Kaine would call some of the stances of Trump and Pence as absurd or ridiculous or nonsense or whatever. And Kane would make a charge, perfectly valid charge, and Pence would say, well, that's ridiculous, or that's absurd, or whatever. And Kane kept missing the opportunity to say, yes, Mike, it is absurd. Some of these stances that you not only deny Trump has taken over these many months, but you steadfastly refuse to disassociate yourself or condemn the stuff that has come out of his wretched mouth for over a year now. And poor Elaine, I forget her name, the CBS woman who moderated.
Quijano.
Yeah, if she ever does this again, I suggest that she arm herself with a whip, a chair, and a gun, you know, like Clyde Beatty or Gunther Gable Williams or one of the wild animal trainers. Because it was next to impossible to maintain any semblance of control.
Well, I mean, Pence sounded like a talk radio guy to me, and you know he's not the screaming maniac of that say Alex Jones or Savage.
Mark Levin is the one I'm thinking of.
but he was measured. He was calm. He used that deepish masculine Midwestern inflected broadcast voice that it makes right-wing women get all fluttery and makes right-wing men just wish they could be him.
Oh, God.
I mean, remember, we live in a bubble. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
That shit plays over on that side. Just because we don't respond to it doesn't mean others don't.
Oh, I know. They lap it up.
But the thing is, he got a pass last night, Pence did, on not being who he actually is. I mean, this guy has a history. This guy spent a lot of time in the House of Representatives, and he made a lot of speeches in front of, you know, empty rooms with cameras going. And he was a culture warrior. I mean, I saw him on three or four or five occasions waxing rhapsodic about the little fetuses in that little spot outside the Capitol where on sunny days in the spring and summer, the people who are fascinated by women's insides will come out to talk about the little fetuses. And he was always there. My God, if you stood him on top of the Capitol, that helmet of white hair he's got, it could serve as a homing beacon for wayward fucking aircraft, okay?
Yeah.
But he plays. I mean, this is a guy who says that we should make it law that we teach intelligent design. Someday scientists will. He said this. Someday scientists will come to see that only the theory of intelligent design provides even a remotely rational explanation for the known universe. But until that day comes, and I have no fear of science, I believe that the more we study the science, the more the truth of faith will become apparent. I mean, this is a guy who thinks the goddamn Creation Museum is an expression of fact. You know, the one where Adam and Eve are in a diorama having a snack down by the river down by the River Jordan while the vegetarian Tyrannosaurus Rex looks on.
Yeah, riding dinosaurs to church.
He thinks, you know, that really happened.
And there was I was glad to see that they briefly touched upon the topic of Social Security, mainly because I'm a recipient, you know, but also because in the entirety of this campaign on either side, I don't think I've heard anybody talk about the poor or the seniors or the disabled in any meaningful or detailed oriented way. And at one point, Pence, see, I almost thought had there been an almighty, he would be struck dead by said deity simply because he talked about, you know, we must watch out for the the least able or the most, what was the word he used? He used an expression, the most vulnerable members of society. Well, Jesus, if you want to privatize Social Security, you're screwing over, the most vulnerable people in society. I don't think that people fully realize what a net that is non-existent under us and the tightrope that we walk month to month, literally, just to keep body and soul together. It's
but again, you know, Kane blew an opportunity on the Social Security question, Scott.
Oh yeah, well that's what I mean. He that also was a prime opportunity for Kane to say, now look, you know, the nonsense that you and Trump and all the rest of the Republicans have spouted for decades on end about supposedly supporting Social Security, it's all bullshit. I know he couldn't say that on CBS TV, but, you know, words to that effect, it's all nonsense because you don't mean a bit of it. If we had listened to Bush after he got supposedly reelected in 2004, they wanted to privatize Social Security and basically have people's financial future, the most vulnerable people, mind you, have their financial future hinge on collecting, you know, recyclable pop bottles or baseball card collections, you know, because that's about as stable as putting it in the stock market, which we found out a couple of years later when the big recession hit.
Yeah, but see, there was another tell involving the Social Security question. Of course, there was nothing. And again, while we did get to talk about the precious little fetuses this time, we blew past another debate without any discussion of meaningful discussion of climate change, at least not that I heard. And I missed a little chunk, but I never heard it. Did you?
No, you didn't hear it because it wasn't talked about.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. So, you know, we can blow off the single greatest existential threat to humanity again. But
yeah, because in the case of climate change, everybody on the entire planet is vulnerable.
Yeah, but some people are more vulnerable than others, and hint, it ain't the Donald Trump class.
No, because they have money enough to where they've got, you know, it's like your golden parachute.
But to get back to the Social Security thing, Scott, what was interesting there was that the question itself was a tell. Because in bringing it up, Elaine Quijano gave a citation for the premise of her question. And what she cited was this group called, and she referred to it as, the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget.
Which translates, don't tax us, folks.
No.
Right?
No, that translates as Pete Peterson's bunch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, it's the same.
The people who want, the people who fall asleep masturbating every night to the idea of privatizing Social Security and subjecting it to the tender mercies of the people who spin roulette wheels on Wall Street.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, Pete Peterson goes way back in the sense that back when Reagan was first in office, he had hired or named Pete Peterson to some highfalutin commission to talk about, you know, savings in government spending and preserving, you know, our good American way of capitalist life, all under the guise, you know, the illusion of having it be about protecting people. Well, it was nothing of the sort. It was about exploiting people.
Sure, but there was also, Scott, an underlying outright lie, and that is Social Security is going broke. And the thing with that assertion is that it's a half-truth. If absolutely everything stays the same and nobody does anything whatsoever about it, Social Security will face reductions in benefits in 17 years.
Yeah.
All that has to happen, among other things, is for the income cap to be lifted.
Yeah, bingo, that fixes it. You know, and
then, you know, there's the but it's also all wrapped up in questions of what the modern meaning of work is. And frankly, it may seem counterintuitive to some, but as somebody who's already been screwed on it, you know, I don't get Social Security when I'm 62. I'm not eligible for it when I'm 65. At best, it's 67, and, you know, the Republican Party would like to either eliminate it altogether or run it up to 70. That because they're betting me that I won't live that long, and they're betting a whole bunch of America that they won't live that long, because actually American lifespans are decreasing in the working class.
Yeah, and there's a vast quantity of difference between somebody who digs ditches or actually does manual labor, doing that until they're 70, versus, you know, somebody who clips their bond coupons for their main source of their income. Huge difference. You know, it doesn't take much to be able to pick up, you know, scissors or whatever and tear out those coupons to keep that investment money rolling.
Right, because there are things that go along with that life, which includes access to decent medical care. Access on a daily basis to better quality food. Okay, the coupon clippers aren't eating off the dollar menu at McDonald's.
Hell no.
So, it's. Well, as Steve points out via an email, you could lift the cap and shock actually cut the rate. And the other counterintuitive part of this that I think should be looked at is lowering the retirement age. Okay? I mean, there's nothing that says somebody has to retire at 67. Although, if you've survived to 67, working at Walmart, you're quitting the minute. I mean, if you possibly can, you're quitting the minute you're quitting on your 67th birthday.
Yeah.
But if you think about, for instance, the problems. And it is a big problem. If you think about the problems that the so-called millennials are having, finding meaningful work that actually meets their expectations and their needs alongside their educational experience, you know, the freakout society had a conniption over the release of Hillary Clinton talking about Bernie's young supporters. And they tried to make it out like she was mocking them. She wasn't. She was commiserating. I mean, I've criticized the woman up one wall and down the other, but I saw that. No, she was commiserating, and Bernie was like, "Yeah, she gets it."
Yeah,
because because if you graduate with a magna cum laude in finance and you wind up working at Starbucks, you're getting screwed.
Yeah, because today's younger person is not at all like younger people back when I was young or when you were young, okay? Because we had actual opportunities to make good in life and could still have if you had a good one income job, you know, and you were married, the wife or the spouse, whomever, had the option to be a house person, okay? In today's world, it's not like that. It's not like when I was a kid or when you were a kid.
No, and just to extend this just a minute, if you think about all those underemployed, underutilized, if we dare use that word, workforce that's down there somewhere between 18 and 35. What happens if you lower the Social Security retirement age to, say, 60? Well, you got a lot of people leaving the workforce. That opens up jobs for people who don't have jobs, who have long work lives in front of them.
Right.
If at the same time you eliminate the payroll cap, and if at the same time you provide you bring undocumented immigrants out of the shadow economy, off the black labor market, so to speak, or the labor black market, then it's quite possible suddenly Social Security isn't in trouble anymore. It's not in trouble, it's flush.
You know they can't have that.
No, because remember, the goal of the Republican Party is to get rid of Social Security.
Right. They didn't want it to begin with back in the 30s. Well, I see the clock on the wall. Let me end with a happy note. Today, at long last, I finally got all the tumblers in the right order and was able to use the chat room with having this Mac. So if anybody wants to know, send 10 cents in coin to Scott in San Diego, and I'll carry them through the steps if they have a Mac.
Okay, that could actually be quite helpful. If at some point in time you want to do a walkthrough of that, let me know.
Yeah, it was way simpler than I ever thought it would be.
Before we do go, we have an important question coming from Jen in Australia. She says, we're babysitting a cockatiel right now. Can they get ear mites?
I don't know. I guess any creature could. Unless they were down on the floor, I don't know where the hell they'd contract them, because
they're not exactly airborne.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's possible. I'll look it up, and we'll address that on a...
You've never had that problem with Punky, though?
Oh, hell no. No.
Okay.
He's fit as a fiddle, as they say. I was going to say sound as a dollar, but I don't... Knock on wood. I don't want to put it that way.
Right.
But, yeah, it was ultimately just a matter of using Firefox and having the correct version of Java.
Wow. Okay.
To get into the chat room.
All right. Well, thanks, Scott. And tell Punky we said good night.
I certainly will, Bob. Good night.
Bye now. And so it's time to get out of here. Remember, 2-hour program tomorrow night because I'll be filling in for Malloy at 9 p.m. Possibility of no program tonight because of Ferg's consult in Charleston. But I'm going to do everything in my power to get back by 6 p.m. Quick update on the challenges. Thank you, one and all. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Charlene, for meeting Carol's nightstand challenge. That leaves Bob in Texas challenge on the table. And I got a note from Bob saying, please bring up the matching challenge again tomorrow. And I absolutely will. And that's very kind of Bob to carry the challenge over. Thank you very, very much. So we've knocked off $130 of the $365 we needed to raise. That means tomorrow evening we will be at, oh God, I can't even, but I'll do it then. But we do have a $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Bob in Texas. Thank you very much. And hey, I got to get out of here because it's already 9 o'clock and I got to get on the road and go pick up Margie from work. Later, y'all. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.